Well, good to see you, Zolita. I think you're doing the right thing. And I think I can say we think you're doing the right thing for safety. But it will be sad for all of us. Sad for you leaving Claude and Amarillo. And Zolita's been our neighbor, not quite next door, but a block and a half away. So we walk the grandkids and the dog by there all the time. And glad Olivia got to come a few times. Her main ministry is, prayer and care for everybody, but also children and working with Child Evangelism Fellowship for years at Forest Hills and care about after school hours and Bible studies. And I noticed when you came in here this morning, you went right over to see Steve Wilson, probably to ask about the little girls that are back there. So God's grace to you. And September 24th is what I remember. We'll be moving to Oklahoma to be with Terrell, her son. And hopefully you won't have to go to the doctor as often, but if so, there'll be somebody to help you. Genesis 9 contained many events and topics that fit our current world. We talked about God said you don't have to be vegetarian anymore, and a little bit of talk of even birth control with be fruitful and multiply, and I think that's as you decide for yourselves, but be fruitful and multiply. Capital punishment. Whosoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. And that's a pre-law. So even if the law of Moses was abrogated, that's pre-law. Genesis 11 is today's study. That talks about the Tower of Babel. That will also fit contemporary topics like danger in big cities and globalism. So we'll get to Genesis 11. I wasn't quite sure what to do with chapter 10 because it's a bunch of obscure names, some of which we know. But let's glance a little bit at Genesis 10. Noah's three sons left the ark, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Humanity started all over again. And that's why the Turks think they're the origin of the world. And I was surprised when the missionary over there told me that. We're there on a visit, and they all think they're the center of the world. And they will tell you, if you don't agree with it, that that's where the ark was. Genesis 10 lists their descendants. We'll have a little bit of time trouble with details. I did put a couple of maps out, and, after we read, we'll take a look at this map, because I don't think we'll memorize where all the nations come from, but just a few minutes. So we begin reading in Genesis 10, 1 and 2. Now these are the records of the generations of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the sons of Noah, and the sons were born to them after the flood. The sons of Japheth were Gomer and Magog and Madai and Yavin and Tubal and Meshech and Tyrus, which is all kind of unknown except for maybe Magog. Verse 3, Ashkenaz, like Ashkenazis. Verse 4, Tarshish, which would be Spain. So Japheth's descendants are what we call Indo-European. Using a map, I have circled them in red, some of the names we just read. They moved north, north of Israel, but a little north of the Ark. Gog and Magog we may know as Russia from studies in the book of Ezekiel and end time events. Tarshish is over there in Spain, most likely. That's where Jonah wanted to go when he got on a boat. Ashkenaz is not Jewish, but very often they have the phrase Ashkenazi Jews, which means they're from Europe. And so the red, or number one, these are from Japheth, Indo-Europeans. The next verses are about Ham, and we'll begin reading in verse 6. These are going to be those that are circled in black. Verse 6, Genesis 10. The sons of Ham were Cush, and Mitzrayim, and Put, and Canaan. Now we'll read about Nimrod in verse 8. Cush became the father of Nimrod. He became a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. Now a little bit on cities. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel. That'll be enough. But if we look in verse 11, he also built Nineveh, kind of famous for the Assyrians coming later in the Bible story. Ham was the ancestor of the Africans and the Egyptians. Cush is Ethiopia in the Bible. Mitzrayim is Egypt. If memory serves me right, that's still the name of their airlines. That's what they call themselves. So descendants of Ham would be the Egyptians and the Ethiopians, Africans. Now, Canaan was, you know, in the Promised Land, and we tend to think of them as Semites, but they ancestry was from Ham. Sometimes ancestry and language are a different thing. Like, I'm two generations from Dutch, and I can't speak Dutch, but I'm only two generations from one line of being Dutch. But the Canaanites were from Ham and related to the Egyptians and the Ethiopians. The final one for this review, and we'll kind of review it and move on to the Tower of Babel, would be Shem. That's verse 21. Also to Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, the older brother of Japheth, children were born. Glancing, verse 22, we have the Arameans, we would say Syrians. Uz, that's the book of Job, in the land of Uz. At verse 25, one of the sons is named Eber, and you'll see why I made mention of that in a few seconds. The Semites are in blue here on our map. You first think, well, Israel is from there, but I don't see any Israel. But, of course, Abraham started in Mesopotamia. Abraham started in this land between the two rivers, Mesopotamia. So Israel will be coming from this Semite line, but not yet. And, soon we'll get to chapter 12 in life of Abraham, but not yet. Shem was the father of Eber, and the reason I mentioned that is that's where the word Hebrew comes from. So this is a fun study, but to tell you the truth, every time I do it, I make notes, put them in the file, and 5 years later, I can't remember them until I get out the notes and look at them. So I thought that might be a reason to review it today, but not go into all the details. It's kind of interesting, but we'll keep sort of looking at the nations now as we move to the Tower of Babel. Genesis 11, verse 1. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same words. There are about 3,000 languages now and dialects that are used, not extinct. There are about 3,000 different ones. People who do this for obsession and full-time job, they have enough similarities that they do point to a common original. But there are enough differences that the divisions can't be explained naturally. I think that's a fascinating conclusion from people who do this. They're all alike, and they all come from common, but we can't figure out how they split, which kind of makes the story of the Tower of Babel very interesting. Another related is that all the 3,000 human languages are equally distinct from animal noises. They didn't arise from animal noises. You know, dogs and cats and cows and monkeys and that noise and chattering, and it's got nothing to do with human language. 3,000 languages point to a common origin, but they're nothing like animal noises. It's not the same. Animal noises make noise, but they're not entirely logical. Human languages are equally complex. Now, it might be true that different parts of the earth are not as technologically complex, but all the human languages are complex in terms of logic. They all have cause and effect. They all have abstract words that are not things like love. They all have numbers. Now, they all make an argument to a conclusion, you know, step one, step two, step three, therefore conclusion. All human languages have rational logic. It wasn't quite before the flood, but 40 years ago, in my first year of Hebrew, our professor taught us that all languages in the world can be traced back to Semitic language, except they don't know what to do with Korean. So I got to work on Korean. Ichi ni san shi go roko sichi hachi kujo. You got them too, huh? 1 to 10. Don't know Korean. All the other languages can be traced back. Now that's Homer Heater. He's still with us. I always liked Homer Heater because Homer sounds like West Virginia Farm, and it is, but he got his PhD in Semitics from Catholic University of America and taught at the seminary in Washington where I went. All languages can be traced back to Semitic. What was the original language? Well, I don't know for sure, but the names in Genesis 1 through 11 are Hebrew. Adam is Hebrew, dust. Eve is Hebrew, life. Noah is Hebrew, rest. So all of the names in Genesis 1 through 11 before the Tower of Babel are still Hebrew. So, I mean, that'd be a guess. That doesn't exactly say chapter and verse. That'd be a guess. Semitic. Zephaniah 3:9 says we're all going back to one language after the second coming and when Jesus sets up his kingdom. Zephaniah 3:9, for I will give to the people a purified lips that they all may call upon the Lord and serve him shoulder to shoulder. It's not a statement of faith, but could be the original language was Hebrew and that we're going back to it. I think I've done this before, but can you picture a capital A and make it upside down? It means ox. So it means ox. Put a line in between it and draw a couple of I's and it means ox. B, make a capital B and make it kind of square. It means house. It's the drawing of a house. Make it square. A is ox. Put it upside down. B. The languages are Semitic. They go together. Now, I didn't review it, but the Hebrew textbook goes through all of the alphabet, all of the Hebrew alphabet, and makes pictures for them. I've always wondered about this. Sanskrit, father is Pitar. Persian, father is Pitar. Latin, Pater. Greek, Pater, as in paternal. German, Vater. English, father. They're kind of all together. The world languages were all one. They're not like animal noises. But there are enough differences in their separation that they can't explain how they separated, except for the story that we're going to read. Very common to study Chinese words after that, how they draw their, you know, the way they write their words. And we'll leave that to, say, Acts and Facts. Look up archives on Institute for Creation Research. And anyway, I'm reading Timothy Clary's book on the flood now. And the last chapter, I haven't got that far, is on Chinese letters. My good friend has lived in Japan for 35 years, Jonathan Luthy. And he sent me a letter. I could photocopy it for everybody. But he says that life means this. Dirt, nose, ability to walk. Sounds like Adam. God breathed into his nostrils, made him out of dirt. There's a creation is a dirt, mouth, life, ability to walk. The Japanese word for boat means eight mouths. So I didn't copy off this letter from him to you, but Japanese for righteousness drawing, sheep, hand, knife, righteous. Isn't that weird? We went to seminary together years ago, and he's lived in Japan all that time, and when he was learning Japanese 35 years ago, he was just fascinated with this and had these comments. The global world was all one race, which is how I would describe it, and one language. So let's continue. Verse 2. It came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. They said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used brick for stone and they used tar for mortar. They said, come, let us build for ourselves a city whose tar will reach into the top of heaven. And I like this phrase, let us make for ourselves a name. Heavens. Otherwise, we will be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Now, God had told Noah, you leave the ark and be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth again. And that sort of assumes moving around. And it looks like to this point, nobody's moving around, that they all stay together for generation after generation. It could be the original generation off the ark did not obey. And following generations didn't even know about it anymore. One human race. And we don't talk that way. Our culture doesn't talk, we talk about races. We don't, but you know, theologically, one human race. That's really the best. Ken read Acts 17:26, and we made sure that we had the full part of it. He has made from one man every nation of mankind to live upon the earth, having determined their appointed times and boundaries of their habitation. One race, many nations. Greek words, ethnic, many nations. One race. It'd be better if we talked that way, but I think it's too late. We're not going to. You know, individuals. But be better. Sons of Shem, Ham, and Japheth all had genes within them. They'd say latent genes, those that are good at that sort of thing. And I think all the differences of the one human race, all the differences were latent genes within this family off the ark, starting over again. Archaeologists are going to call the tower a ziggurat. There are archaeology study Bibles who have pictures of reconstructed ziggurats. There are ziggurat in Ur, who would make us think of Abram, later Abraham, who no doubt saw that full ziggurat. And I think it's okay if you want an archaeology study Bible. I haven't had time to evaluate it fully. It looks okay as far as I can see. But it has a picture here of it. And on the second pages of the notes we handed out, there's like updated findings. Underline in red a little bit about these ruins of towers. They found a different one, different than Ur and different than Babel, but there's so many of them. Looking at the red parts underlined, 27 known tablets in three different places. They kind of put them together. And it talks about a temple that they brag about, a house for the gods on the top. You go over to the right, which didn't copy very well, no matter how many times I stuck the book on it, but quoting the ancient tablets, a holy mountain, a great shrine, an abode of the gods, and they would sing in a single language. The quotation then is in the last part of the underline, red part. This is a quotation of this ancient tablet, which is like going back to 2600 BC. They may all address Enlil together in a single language. If you look at the last part of the phrase, so the speech of mankind is truly one. Now, that would not be coming from the Tower of Babel, but it seems to be a memory from it. And they find these ziggurats all over the place. I didn't take time to figure out how many. God was very upset over this global unity, very upset over it. They're supposed to go all over the world and repopulate the world, and they all stay together. They wanted a big city. Why a tower? Well, it doesn't say. A couple of these guesses. Number one, did they think there'd be another flood? Did they think God was lying? He might send another flood, so let's make a tall tower. That's a guess. Number two, it's obviously biblical. Autonomy, independence, pride, let us make a name for ourselves. I mean, they're not going to scatter. They're going to stay as one. They're going to stay in rebellion. They're not going to scatter. So possibly to get away from a flood and don't believe God, more assuredly, let us make for a name for ourselves, just arrogance. Now, the other tablets that they find, these are places of worship. That's less stressed here, but that would make perfect sense. Babel in Hebrew means confusion. Babel in Babylonian means the gate of the gods. Two different languages. Sometimes that happens. It sounds the same, two different languages. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a place of worship, and they're worshiping the stars or worshiping the pagan imaginary gods, and nothing new about the New Age. And now we'll continue reading, and God has to do something about it, or it'll just get worse. Verse 5. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they have the same language. And this is what they began to do, and now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. I mean, not like they can do miracles, but nothing they purpose to do. They'll just keep going and going and then in that direction. One human race, still true. Then one language, wouldn't separate, global rebellion. God has to put limitations on the human race or else it'll get worse. The limitation here is division of language. Logically, I think of other limitations. I think the lowering of the time of life or lifespan, I think that's another limitation. I wouldn't be surprised if memory loss is a aspect of limitation. I think even with the curse, if there's not some kind of restraint, people who theoretically would live 500 years, many of them would get worse and worse. And we'd like not to say all. We'd like to say we could handle it, but a lot of them would get worse and worse. I do not know how to footnote it, but I can tell you from memory, I have read that 60% of the SS officers had graduate degrees. Now, evil can be used for God. I mean, knowledge can be used for God's glory. Knowledge need not be bad if it's used for God's glory. But knowledge used for evil makes it worse. I think there is a restraint. One of them is memory loss. Went to a lecture one time in California where they were talking about the human brain, and a surgeon would touch different parts of the human brain, and the person would remember all kinds of things. And the conclusion was, we don't really forget, we just can't bring it up. Probably for the best. Because if someone lived 500 and 600 years, on and on and on, and if it's true, unless there's suppression and we never forget anything, the majority of people would be like what we're reading about here. But specifically in the story, God do something about it. And so let's look at verse 7. Come, let us go down there and confuse their language. They may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore, the name of the place was called Babel. Confusion in Hebrew. Gate of heaven in Babylonian. Confusion, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth. I kind of let people do what they want to do. That's my management style. So we didn't pick God Bless America. The whites did. And Ken picked his talk about the national anthem. But the whole message of Genesis 11 is God doesn't want globalism. I mean, how else do we apply it to the 21st century? God does not want globalism. He wants the earth divided. He wants it divided into languages. He wants it divided into nations. He wants it divided. I do not know exactly how it will be divided from our time, but I think it will be. We look at the end time events in Matthew 24:7, and in the tribulation, nation will rise up against nation. That means in the future tribulation period, there still will be nations all over the world. But do not think there will be world globalism prior to then. I mean, you could say maybe it'll all get together and then divide again, but I think it will be divided the whole time. I think it is God's will that it be divided. Global unity would be in 2 Thessalonians 2, where the Antichrist sits in the temple demanding everyone to worship him. Revelation 13, as many as do not worship the image or the icon of the beast. That's an interesting word. The icon of the beast has to be worshipped. Interesting modern word. Or they will be killed. The Tower of Babel shows that God does not want globalism. And the end time events looks like there won't be globalism when the tribulation starts. And then the Antichrist will force it. So when the world is together and God removes the restraint, it'll just be more and more evil. Presumably not until the future. After we're gone, then God will pull out and just let it kill itself. It'll unite, then it'll be destroyed. But one of the main lessons of Genesis 11 is that God does not want a one-world government. He wants them divided, because if they're together, it will be one world government, one evil government. We carefully read the full verse in Acts 17 about God has appointed their boundaries ahead of time, the boundaries of the nations. One race, many, many nations. That is God's will. And that's his way of restraining evil. Okay, will the choir please come?